This audio program is presented by Audible.com. Audible. Audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
Audio Literature presents The Bhagavad Gita, narrated by Jacob Needleman.
The Bhagavad Gita, the first teaching, Arjuna's dejection. Dhritarashtra speaks to Sanjaya. Sanjaya, tell me what my sons and the sons of Pandu did when they met wanting to battle on the field of Kuru, on the field of sacred duty. Sanjaya, your son Duryodhana, the king, seeing the Pandava forces arrayed, approached his teacher Drona and spoke in command. My teacher, see the great Pandava army arrayed by Drupada's son, your pupil, intent on revenge. Here are heroes, mighty archers equal to Bhima and Arjuna in warfare, Yuyudhna, Virata, and Drupada, your sworn foe, on his great chariot. Here too are Drishtaketu, Chaitanya, and the brave king of Benares, Purujit, Kunti Bhoja, and the manly king of the Shipis. Yudhamanyu is bold and Uttamaujas is brave. The sons of Subhadra and Draupadi all command great chariots. Now, honored priest, mark the superb men on our side as I tell you the names of my army's leaders. They are you and Bhishma, Karna and Kripa, victor in battles. Your own son, Ashwatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta. Many other heroes also risk their lives for my sake, bearing varied weapons and skilled in the ways of war. Guarded by Bhishma, the strength of our army is without limit, but the strength of their army guarded by Bhima is limited. In all the movements of battle, you and your men stationed according to plan must guard Bhishma well. Bhishma, fiery elder of the Kurus, roared his lion's roar and blew his conch horn, exciting Duryodhana's delight. Conches and kettle drums, cymbals, tabors, and trumpets were sounded at once, and the din of tumult arose. Standing on their great white chariot, yoked with white stallions, Krishna and Arjuna, Pandu's son, sounded their divine conches. Krishna blew Panchajanya, one from a demon. Arjuna blew Devadatta, a gift of the gods. Fierce, wolf-bellied Bhima blew Poundra, his great conch of the east. Yudhishthira, Kunti's son, the king, blew Anantavijaya, conch of boundless victory. His twin brothers, Nakula and Sahadeva, blew conches resonant and jewel-toned. The king of Benares, a superb archer, and Shikundin on his great chariot, Drishtadyumna, Virata, and indomitable Satyaki, all blew their conches. Drupada with his five grandsons and Subhadra's strong-armed son, each in his turn, blew their conches, O king. The noise tore the hearts of Dhritarashtra's sons, and tumult echoed through heaven and earth. Arjuna, his war flag a rampant monkey, saw Dhritarashtra's sons assembled as weapons were ready to clash, and he lifted his bow. He told his charioteer, Krishna, halt my chariot between the armies, far enough for me to see these men who lust for war, ready to fight with me in the strain of battle. I see men gathered here, eager to fight, bent on serving the folly of Dhritarashtra's son. When Arjuna had spoken, Krishna halted their splendid chariot between the armies. Facing Bhishma and Drona and all the great kings, He said, Arjuna, see the Kuru men assembled here. Arjuna saw them standing there, fathers, grandfathers, teachers, uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, and friends. He surveyed his elders and companions in both armies, all his kinsmen assembled together. Dejected, filled with strange pity, he said this, Krishna, I see my kinsmen gathered here wanting war. My limbs sink, my mouth is parched, my body trembles, the hair bristles on my flesh. The magic bow slips from my hand. My skin burns, I cannot stand still, my mind reels. I see omens of chaos, Krishna. I see no good in killing my kinsmen in battle. Krishna, I seek no victory or kingship or pleasures. What use to us are kingship, delights, or life itself? We sought kingship, delights, and pleasures for the sake of those assembled to abandon their lives and fortunes in battle. They are teachers, fathers, sons, and grandfathers, uncles, grandsons, fathers, and brothers of wives, and other men of our family. I do not want to kill them, even if I am killed, Krishna. Not for kingship of all three worlds, much less for the earth. What joy is there for us, Krishna, in killing Dhritarashtra's sons? Evil will haunt us if we kill them, though their bows are drawn to kill. Honor forbids us to kill our cousins, Dhritarashtra's sons. How can we know happiness if we kill our own kinsmen? The greed that distorts their reason blinds them to the sin they commit in ruining the family, blinds them to the crime of betraying friends. How can we ignore the wisdom of turning from this evil when we see the sin of family destruction, Krishna? When the family is ruined, the timeless laws of family duty perish. And when duty is lost, chaos overwhelms the family. In overwhelming chaos, Krishna, women of the family are corrupted. And when women are corrupted, disorder is born in society. This discord drags the violators and the family itself to hell. For ancestors fall when rites of offering rice and water lapse. The sins of men who violate the family create disorder in society that undermines the constant laws of caste and family duty. Krishna, we have heard that a place in hell is reserved for men who undermine family duties. I lament the great sin we commit when our greed for kingship and pleasures drives us to kill our kinsmen. If Dhritarashtra's armed sons kill me in battle when I am unarmed and offer no resistance, it will be my reward. Saying this in the time of war, Arjuna slumped into the chariot and laid down his bow and arrows, his mind tormented by grief. The second teaching, philosophy and spiritual discipline. Sanjaya speaks. Arjuna sat dejected, filled with pity, his sad eyes blurred by tears. Krishna gave him counsel. Lord Krishna, why this cowardice in time of crisis, Arjuna? The coward is ignoble, shameful, foreign to the ways of heaven. Don't yield to impotence. It is unnatural in you. Banish this petty weakness from your heart. Rise to the fight, Arjuna. Arjuna, Krishna, how can I fight against Bhishma and Drona with arrows when they deserve my worship? It is better in this world to beg for scraps of food than to eat meals smeared with the blood of elders I killed at the height of their power while their goals were still desires. We don't know which weight is worse to bear, our conquering them or their conquering us. We will not want to live if we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra assembled before us. The flaw of pity blights my very being. Conflicting sacred duties confound my reason. I ask you to tell me decisively, which is better? I am your pupil. Teach me what I seek. I see nothing that could drive away the grief that withers my senses, even if I won kingdoms of unrivaled wealth on earth and sovereignty over gods. Sanjaya. Arjuna told this to Krishna, then saying, I shall not fight, he fell silent. Mocking him gently, Krishna gave this counsel as Arjuna sat dejected between the two armies. Lord Krishna, you grieve for those beyond grief, and you speak words of insight, but learned men do not grieve for the dead or the living. Never have I not existed, nor you, nor these kings, and never in the future shall we cease to exist. Just as the embodied self enters childhood, youth, and old age, so does it enter another body. This does not confound a steadfast man. Contacts with matter make us feel heat and cold, pleasure and pain. Arjuna, you must learn to endure fleeting things. They come and go. When these cannot torment a man, when suffering and joy are equal for him, and he has courage, he is fit for immortality. Nothing of non-being comes to be, nor does being cease to exist. The boundary between these two is seen by men who see reality. Indestructible is the presence that pervades all this. No one can destroy this unchanging reality. Our bodies are known to end, but the embodied self is enduring, indestructible, and immeasurable. Therefore, Arjuna, fight the battle. He who thinks this self a killer, and he who thinks it killed, both fail to understand. It does not kill, nor is it killed. It is not born. It does not die. Having been, it will never not be. Unborn, enduring, constant, and primordial. It is not killed when the body is killed. Arjuna, when a man knows the self to be indestructible, enduring, unborn, unchanging, how does he kill or cause anyone to kill? As a man discards worn-out clothes to put on new and different ones, so the embodied self discards its worn-out bodies to take on other new ones. Weapons do not cut it, fire does not burn it, waters do not wet it, wind does not wither it. It cannot be cut or burned, it cannot be wet or withered. It is enduring, all-pervasive, fixed, immovable, and timeless. It is called unmanifest, inconceivable, and immutable. Since you know that to be so, you should not grieve. If you think of its birth and death as ever recurring, then too, great warrior, you have no cause to grieve. Death is certain for anyone born, and birth is certain for the dead. Since the cycle is inevitable, you have no cause to grieve. Creatures are unmanifest in origin, manifest in the midst of life, and unmanifest again in the end. Since this is so, why do you lament? Rarely someone sees it. Rarely another speaks it. Rarely anyone hears it. Even hearing it, no one really knows it. The self, embodied in the body of every being, is indestructible. You have no cause to grieve for all these creatures, Arjuna. Look to your own duty. Do not tremble before it. Nothing is better for a warrior than a battle of sacred duty. The doors of heaven open for warriors who rejoice to have a battle like this thrust on them by chance. If you fail to wage this war of sacred duty, you will abandon your own duty and fame only to gain evil. People will tell of your undying shame, and for a man of honor, shame is worse than death. The great chariot warriors will think you deserted in fear of battle. You will be despised by those who held you in esteem. Your enemies will slander you, scorning your skill in so many unspeakable ways. Could any suffering be worse? If you are killed, you win heaven. If you triumph, you enjoy the earth. Therefore, Arjuna, stand up and resolve to fight the battle. Impartial to joy and suffering, gain and loss, victory and defeat, arm yourself for the battle, lest you fall into evil. Understanding is defined in terms of philosophy. Now hear it in spiritual discipline. Armed with this understanding, Arjuna, you will escape the bondage of action. No effort in this world is lost or wasted. A fragment of sacred duty saves you from great fear. This understanding is unique in its inner core of resolve. Diffuse and pointless are the ways irresolute men understand. Undiscerning men who delight in the tenets of ritual lore utter florid speech proclaiming there is nothing else. Driven by desire, they strive after heaven and contrive to win powers and delights. But their intricate ritual language bears only the fruit of action in rebirth. Obsessed with powers and delights, their reason lost in words, they do not find in contemplation this understanding of inner resolve. Arjuna, the realm of sacred lore is nature. Beyond its triad of qualities, dualities, and mundane rewards, be forever lucid, alive to yourself. For the discerning priest, all of sacred lore has no more value than a well when water flows everywhere. Be intent on action, not on the fruits of action. Avoid attraction to the fruits and attachment to inaction. Perform actions, firm in discipline, relinquishing attachment. Be impartial to failure and success. This equanimity is called discipline. Arjuna, action is far inferior to the discipline of understanding, so seek refuge in understanding. Pitiful are men drawn by fruits of action. Disciplined by understanding, one abandons both good and evil deeds. So arm yourself for discipline. Discipline is skill in actions. Wise men, disciplined by understanding, relinquish the fruit born of action. Freed from these bonds of rebirth, they reach a place beyond decay. When your understanding passes beyond the swamp of delusion, you will be indifferent to all that is heard in sacred lore. When your understanding turns from sacred lore to stand fixed, immovable in contemplation, then you will reach discipline. Arjuna, Krishna, what defines a man deep in contemplation whose insight and thought are sure? How would he speak? How would he sit? How would he move? Lord Krishna, when he gives up desires in his mind, is content with the self within himself, then he is said to be a man whose insight is sure, Arjuna. When suffering does not disturb his mind, when his craving for pleasures has vanished, when attraction, fear, and anger are gone, he is called a sage whose thought is sure. When he shows no preference in fortune or misfortune, and neither exults nor hates, his insight is sure. When, like a tortoise retracting its limbs, he withdraws his senses completely from sensuous objects, his insight is sure. Sensuous objects fade when the embodied self abstains from food. The taste lingers, but it too fades in the vision of higher truth. Even when a man of wisdom tries to control them, Arjuna, the bewildering senses attack his mind with violence. Controlling them all with discipline, he should focus on me. When his senses are under control, his insight is sure. Brooding about sensuous objects makes attachment to them grow. From attachment, desire arises. From desire, anger is born. From anger comes confusion. From confusion, memory lapses. From broken memory, understanding is lost. From loss of understanding, he is ruined. But a man of inner strength, whose senses experience objects without attraction and hatred, in self-control, finds serenity. In serenity, all his sorrows dissolve. His reason becomes serene, his understanding sure. Without discipline, he has no understanding or inner power. Without inner power, he has no peace, and without peace, where is joy? If his mind submits to the play of the senses, they drive away insight as wind drives a ship on water. So, great warrior, when withdrawal of the senses from sense objects is complete, discernment is firm. When it is night for all creatures, a master of restraint is awake. When they are awake, it is night for the sage who sees reality. As the mountainous depths of the ocean are unmoved when waters rush into it, so the man unmoved when desires enter him attains a peace that eludes the man of many desires. When he renounces all desires and acts without craving, possessiveness, or individuality, he finds peace. This is the place of the infinite spirit. Achieving it, one is freed from delusion. Abiding in it, even at the time of death, one finds the pure calm of infinity. The third teaching, discipline of action. Arjuna speaks. If you think understanding is more powerful than action, why, Krishna, do you urge me to this horrific act? You confuse my understanding with a maze of words. Speak one certain truth, so I may achieve what is good. Lord Krishna, earlier I taught the twofold basis of good in this world. For philosophers, discipline, knowledge. For men of discipline, action. A man cannot escape the force of action by abstaining from actions. He does not attain success just by renunciation. No one exists for even an instant without performing action. However unwilling, every being is forced to act by the qualities of nature. When his senses are controlled, but he keeps recalling sense objects with his mind, he is a self-deluded hypocrite. When he controls his senses with his mind and engages in the discipline of action with his faculties of action, detachment sets him apart. Perform necessary action. It is more powerful than inaction. Without action, you even fail to sustain your own body. Action imprisons the world unless it is done as sacrifice. Freed from attachment, Arjuna, perform action as sacrifice. When creating living beings and sacrifice, Prajapati, the primordial creator, said, "By sacrifice you will procreate. Let it be your wish-granting cow. Foster the gods with this, and may they foster you. By enriching one another, you will achieve a higher good. Enriched by sacrifice, the gods will give you the delights you desire. He is a thief who enjoys their gifts without giving to them in return. Good men, eating the remnants of sacrifice, are free of any guilt. But evil men who cook for themselves eat the food of sin. Creatures depend on food. Food comes from rain. Rain depends on sacrifice, and sacrifice comes from action. Action comes from the spirit of prayer, whose source is Om, sound of the imperishable. So the pervading infinite spirit is ever present in rites of sacrifice. He who fails to keep turning the wheel here set in motion wastes his life in sin, addicted to the senses, Arjuna. But when a man finds delight within himself and feels inner joy and pure contentment in himself, there is nothing more to be done. He has no stake here in deeds done or undone, nor does his purpose depend on other creatures. Always perform with detachment any action you must do. Performing action with detachment, one achieves the supreme good. Janaka and other ancient kings attain perfection by action alone. Seeing the way to preserve the world, you should act. Whatever a leader does, the ordinary people also do. He sets the standard for the world to follow. In the three worlds, there is nothing I must do. Nothing unattained to be attained, yet I engage in action. What if I did not engage relentlessly in action? Men retrace my path at every turn, Arjuna. These worlds would collapse if I did not perform action. I would create disorder in society. Living beings would be destroyed. As the ignorant act with attachment to actions, Arjuna, so wise men should act with detachment to preserve the world. No wise man disturbs the understanding of ignorant men attached to action. He should inspire them, performing all actions with discipline. Actions are all effected by the qualities of nature, but deluded by individuality, the self thinks, "I am the actor." When he can discriminate the actions of nature's qualities and think, "The qualities depend on other qualities," he is detached. Those deluded by the qualities of nature are attached to their actions. A man who knows this should not upset these dull men of partial knowledge. Surrender all actions to me and fix your reason on your inner self. Without hope or possessiveness, your fever subdued, fight the battle. Men who always follow my thought, trusting it without finding fault, are freed even by their actions. But those who find fault and fail to follow my thought know that they are lost fools, deluded by every bit of knowledge. Even a man of knowledge behaves in accord with his own nature. Creatures all conform to nature. What can one do to restrain them? attraction and hatred are poised in the object of every sense experience. A man must not fall prey to these two brigands lurking on his path. Your own duty, done imperfectly, is better than another man's done well. It is better to die in one's own duty. Another man's duty is perilous. Arjuna speaks, Krishna, what makes a person commit evil against his own will, as if compelled by force? Lord Krishna, it is desire and anger arising from nature's quality of passion. Know it here as the enemy, voracious and very evil. As fire is obscured by smoke and a mirror by dirt, as an embryo is veiled by its call, so is knowledge obscured by this. Knowledge is obscured by the wise man's eternal enemy, which takes form as desire, an insatiable fire, Arjuna. The senses, mind, and understanding are said to harbor desire. With these, desire obscures knowledge and confounds the embodied self. Therefore, first restrain your senses, Arjuna, then kill this evil that ruins knowledge and judgment. Men say that the senses are superior to their objects, the mind superior to the senses, understanding superior to the mind. Higher than understanding is the self. Knowing the self beyond understanding, sustain the self with the self. Great warrior, kill the enemy menacing you in the form of desire. The fourth teaching, knowledge. Lord Krishna speaks, I taught this undying discipline to the shining sun, first of mortals, who told it to Manu, the progenitor of man. Manu told it to the solar king, Ikshvaku. Royal sages knew this discipline which the tradition handed down, but over the course of time it has decayed, Arjuna. This is the ancient discipline that I have taught you today. You are my devotee and my friend, and this is the deepest mystery. Arjuna says, Your birth followed the birth of the sun. How can I comprehend that you taught it in the beginning? Lord Krishna, I have passed through many births, and so have you. I know them all, but you do not, Arjuna. Though myself unborn, undying, the Lord of creatures, I fashion nature which is mine, and I come into being through my own magic. Whenever sacred duty decays and chaos prevails, then I create myself, Arjuna. To protect men of virtue and destroy men who do evil, to set the standard of sacred duty, I appear in age after age. He who really knows my divine birth and my action escapes rebirth when he abandons the body and he comes to me, Arjuna. Free from attraction, fear, and anger, filled with me, dependent on me, purified by the fire of knowledge, many come into my presence. As they seek refuge in me, I devote myself to them. Arjuna, men retrace my path in every way. Desiring success in their actions, men sacrifice here to the gods. In the world of men, success comes quickly from action. I created mankind in four classes, different in their qualities and actions. Though unchanging, I am the agent of this, the actor who never acts. I desire no fruit of actions, and actions do not defile me. One who knows this about me is not bound by actions. Knowing this, even ancient seekers of freedom performed action. Do as these seers did in ancient times. What is action? What is inaction? Even the poets were confused. What I shall teach you of action will free you from misfortune. One should understand action, understand wrong action, and understand inaction too. The way of action is obscure. A man who sees inaction in action and action in inaction has understanding among men, disciplined in all action he performs. The wise say a man is learned when his plans lack constructs of desire, when his actions are burned by the fire of knowledge, abandoning attachment to fruits of action, always content, independent. He does nothing at all, even when he engages in action. He incurs no guilt if he has no hope, restrains his thought and himself, abandons possessions, and performs actions with his body only. Content with whatever comes by chance, beyond dualities, free from envy, impartial to failure and success, he is not bound even when he acts. When a man is unattached and free, his reason deep in knowledge, acting only in sacrifice, his action is wholly dissolved. The infinite spirit is the offering, the oblation it pours into infinite fire, and the infinite spirit can be reached by contemplating its infinite action. Some men of discipline offer sacrifice only to the gods. Others sacrifice with oblation in the fire of infinite spirit. Some offer senses such as hearing in the fires of restraint. Others offer sound and other objects in the fires of the senses. Others offer all actions of the senses and all actions of breath in the fire of discipline kindled by knowledge, the mastery of oneself. Ascetics who keep strict vows sacrifice with material objects through penance, discipline, study of sacred lore and knowledge. Others sacrifice by suspending the cycle of vital breath, the flow of inhaling and exhaling as they practice breath control. Others, restricting their food, offer breaths in vital breaths. All these understand sacrifice, and in sacrifice exhaust their sins. Men who eat remnants of sacrifice attain the timeless, infinite spirit. What is this world or the next for a man without sacrifice, Arjuna? Many forms of sacrifice expand toward the infinite spirit. Know that the source of them all is action, and you will be free. Sacrifice in knowledge is better than sacrifice with material objects. The totality of all action culminates in knowledge, Arjuna. Know it by humble submission, by asking questions, and by service. Wise men who see reality will give you knowledge. Arjuna, when you have realized this, you will not descend into delusion again. Knowledge will let you see creatures within yourself, and so in me. Even if you are the most evil of all sinners, you will cross over all evil on the raft of knowledge. Just as a flaming fire reduces wood to ashes, Arjuna, so the fire of knowledge reduces all actions to ashes. No purifier equals knowledge, and in time the man of perfect discipline discovers this in his own spirit. Faithful, intent. His sense is subdued. He gains knowledge. Gaining knowledge, he soon finds perfect peace. An ignorant man is lost, faithless, and filled with self-doubt. A soul that harbors doubt has no joy, not in this world or the next. Arjuna, actions do not bind a man in possession of himself. Who renounces action through discipline and severs doubt with knowledge. So sever the ignorant doubt in your heart with the sword of self-knowledge, Arjuna. Observe your discipline. Arise. The fifth teaching, renunciation of action. Arjuna speaks. Krishna, you praise renunciation of actions and then discipline. Tell me with certainty, which is the better of these two? Lord Krishna, renunciation and discipline in action both effect good beyond measure. But of the two, discipline in action surpasses renunciation of action. The man of eternal renunciation is one who neither hates nor desires. Beyond dualities, he is easily freed from bondage. Simpletons separate philosophy and discipline, but the learned do not. Applying one correctly, a man finds the fruit of both. Men of discipline reach the same place that philosophers attain. He really sees who sees philosophy and discipline to be one. Renunciation is difficult to attain without discipline. A sage armed with discipline soon reaches the infinite spirit. Armed with discipline, he purifies and subdues the self, masters his senses, unites himself with the self of all creatures. Even when he acts, he is not defiled. Seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, walking, sleeping, breathing, the disciplined man who knows reality should think, I do nothing at all. When talking, giving, taking, opening and closing his eyes, he keeps thinking, it is the senses that engage in sense objects. A man who relinquishes attachment and dedicates actions to the infinite spirit is not stained by evil, like a lotus leaf unstained by water. Relinquishing attachment, men of discipline perform action with body, mind, understanding, and senses for the purification of the self. Relinquishing the fruit of action, the disciplined man attains perfect peace. The undisciplined man is in bondage, attached to the fruit of his desire. Renouncing all actions with the mind, the masterful, embodied self dwells at ease in its nine-gated fortress. It neither acts nor causes action. The Lord of the world does not create agency or actions or a union of fruits with actions, but his being unfolds into existence. The Lord does not partake of anyone's evil or good conduct. Knowledge is obscured by ignorance, so people are deluded. When ignorance is destroyed by knowledge of the self, then like the sun, knowledge illumines ultimate reality. That becomes their understanding, their self, their basis, and their goal, and they reach a state beyond return, their sin dispelled by knowledge. Learned men see with an equal eye a scholarly and a dignified priest, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and even an outcast scavenger. Men who master the worldly world have equanimity. They exist in the infinite spirit in its flawless equilibrium. He should not rejoice in what he loves, nor recoil from what disgusts him. Secure in understanding, undiluted, knowing the infinite spirit, he abides in it. Detached from external contacts, he discovers joy in himself. Joined by discipline to the infinite spirit, the self attains inexhaustible joy. Delights from external objects are wombs of suffering. In their beginning is their end, and no wise man delights in them. A man able to endure the force of desire and anger before giving up his body is disciplined and joyful. The man of discipline has joy, delight, and light within. Becoming the infinite spirit, he finds the pure calm of infinity. Seers who can destroy their sins, cut through doubt, master the self, and delight in the good of all creatures, attain the pure calm of infinity. The pure calm of infinity exists for the ascetic who disarms desire and anger, controls reason, and knows the self. He shuns external objects, fixes his gaze between his brows, and regulates his vital breaths as they pass through his nostrils. Truly free is the sage who controls his senses, mind, and understanding, who focuses on freedom and dispels desire, fear, and anger. Knowing me as the enjoyer of sacrifices and penances, Lord of all worlds, and friend of all creatures, he finds peace. The sixth teaching. The man of discipline. Lord Krishna speaks. One who does what must be done without concern for the fruits is a man of renunciation and discipline, not one who shuns ritual fire and rites. Know that discipline, Arjuna, is what men call renunciation. No man is disciplined without renouncing willful intent. Action is the means for a sage who seeks to mature in discipline. Tranquility is the means for one who is mature in discipline. He is said to be mature in discipline when he has renounced all intention and is detached from sense objects and actions. He should elevate himself by the self, not degrade himself. For the self is its own friend and its own worst foe. The self is the friend of a man who masters himself through the self. But for a man without self-mastery, the self is like an enemy at war. The higher self of a tranquil man whose self is mastered is perfectly poised in cold or heat, joy or suffering, honor or contempt. Self-contented in knowledge and judgment, his senses subdued, on the summit of existence, impartial to clay, stone, or gold, the man of discipline is disciplined. He is set apart by his disinterest toward comrades, allies, enemies, neutrals, non-partisans, foes, friends, good and even evil men. A man of discipline should always discipline himself, remain in seclusion, isolated, his thought and self well controlled, without possessions or hope. He should fix for himself a firm seat in a pure place, neither too high nor too low, covered in cloth, deerskin, or grass. He should focus his mind and restrain the activity of his thought and senses. sitting on that seat, he should practice discipline for the purification of the self. He should keep his body, head, and neck aligned, immobile, steady. He should gaze at the tip of his nose and not let his glance wander. The self tranquil, his fear dispelled, firm in his vow of celibacy, his mind restrained, let him sit with discipline, his thought fixed on me, intent on me. Disciplining himself, his mind controlled, a man of discipline finds peace, the pure calm that exists in me. Gluttons have no discipline, nor the man who starves himself, nor he who sleeps excessively or suffers wakefulness. When a man disciplines his diet and diversions, his physical actions, his sleeping and waking, discipline destroys his sorrow. When his controlled thought rests within the self alone, without craving objects of desire, he is said to be disciplined. He does not waver like a lamp sheltered from the wind, is the simile recalled for a man of discipline, restrained in thought and practicing self-discipline. When his thought ceases, checked by the exercise of discipline, he is content within the self, seeing the self through himself. Absolute joy beyond the senses can only be grasped by understanding. When one knows it, he abides there and never wanders from this reality. Obtaining it, he thinks there is no greater gain. Abiding there, he is unmoved even by deep suffering. Since he knows that discipline means unbinding the bonds of suffering, he should practice discipline resolutely, without despair dulling his reason. He should entirely relinquish desires aroused by willful intent. He should entirely control his senses with his mind. He should gradually become tranquil, firmly controlling his understanding, focusing his mind on the self. He should think of nothing. Wherever his faltering mind unsteadily wanders, he should restrain it and bring it under self-control. When his mind is tranquil, perfect joy comes to the man of discipline. His passion is calmed. He is without sin, being one with the infinite spirit, constantly disciplining himself. Free from sin, the man of discipline easily achieves perfect joy in harmony with the infinite spirit. Arming himself with discipline, seeing everything with an equal eye, he sees the self in all creatures, and all creatures in the self. He who sees me everywhere, and sees everything in me, will not be lost to me, and I will not be lost to him. I exist in all creatures, so the disciplined man devoted to me grasps the oneness of life wherever he is in me. When he sees identity in everything, whether joy or suffering, through analogy with the self, he is deemed a man of pure discipline. Arjuna asks, "You define this discipline by equanimity, Krishna, but in my faltering condition, I see no ground for it. Krishna, the mind is faltering, violent, strong, and stubborn. I find it as difficult to hold as the wind." Lord Krishna answers, "Without doubt, the mind is unsteady and hard to hold, but practice and dispassion can restrain it, Arjuna. In my view, discipline eludes the unrestrained self, but if he strives to master himself, a man has the means to reach it." Arjuna says, "When a man has faith, but no ascetic will, and his mind deviates from discipline before its perfection is achieved, what way is there for him, Krishna? Doomed by his double failure, is he not like a cloud split apart, unsettled, deluded on the path of the Infinite Spirit? Krishna, only you can dispel this doubt of mine completely. There is no one but you to dispel this doubt. Lord Krishna answers, Arjuna, he does not suffer doom in this world or the next. Any man who acts with honor cannot go the wrong way, my friend. Fallen in discipline, he reaches worlds made by his virtue, wherein he dwells for endless years, until he is reborn in a house of upright and noble men. Or he is born in a family of disciplined men, the kind of birth in the world that is very hard to win. There he regains a depth of understanding from his former life and strives further to perfection, Arjuna. Carried by the force of his previous practice, a man who seeks to learn discipline passes beyond sacred lore that expresses the Infinite Spirit in words. The man of discipline, striving with effort, purified of his sins, perfected through many births, finds a higher way. He is deemed superior to men of penance, men of knowledge, and men of action. Be a man of discipline, Arjuna. Of all the men of discipline, the faithful man devoted to me, with his inner self deep in mine, I deem most disciplined. The seventh teaching, knowledge and judgment. Lord Krishna speaks. Practice discipline in my protection with your mind focused on me. Arjuna, hear how you can know me completely without doubt. I will teach you the totality of knowledge and judgment. This known, nothing else in the world need be known. One man among thousands strives for success, and of the few who are successful, a rare one knows my reality. My nature has eight aspects: earth, water, fire, wind, space, mind, understanding, and individuality. This is my lower nature. Know my higher nature too, the life force that sustains this universe. Learn that this is the womb of all creatures. I am the source of all the universe, just as I am its dissolution. Nothing is higher than I am, Arjuna. All that exists is woven on me like a web of pearls on thread. I am the taste in water, Arjuna, the light in the moon and sun, Om, resonant in all sacred lore, the sound in space, valor in men. I am the pure fragrance in earth, the brilliance in fire, the life in all living creatures, the penance in ascetics. Know me, Arjuna, as every creature's timeless seed, the understanding of intelligent men, the brilliance of fiery heroes. Of strong men, I am strength without the emotion of desire. In creatures, I am the desire that does not impede sacred duty. Know that nature's qualities come from me, lucidity, passion, and dark inertia. I am not in them, they are in me. All this universe, deluded by the qualities inherent in nature, fails to know that I am beyond them and unchanging. Composed of nature's qualities, my divine magic is hard to escape. But those who seek refuge in me cross over this magic. Vile, deluded sinners are the men who fail to take refuge in me. Their knowledge ruined by magic, they fall prey to demonic power. Arjuna, four types of virtuous men are devoted to me: the tormented man, the seeker of wisdom, the suppliant, and the sage. Of these, the disciplined man of knowledge is set apart by his singular devotion. I am dear to the man of knowledge, and he is dear to me. They are all noble, but I regard the man of knowledge to be my very self. Self-discipline, he holds me to be the highest way. At the end of many births, the man of knowledge finds refuge in me. He is the rare great spirit who sees Krishna is all that is. Robbed of knowledge by stray desires, men take refuge in other deities. Observing varied rites, they are limited by their own nature. I grant unwavering faith to any devoted man who wants to worship any form with faith. Disciplined by that faith, he seeks the deity's favor. This secured, he gains desires that I myself grant. But finite is the reward that comes to men of little wit. Men who sacrifice to gods reach the gods. Those devoted to me reach me. Men without understanding think that I am unmanifest nature become manifest. They are ignorant of my higher existence, my pure, unchanging, absolute being. Veiled in the magic of my discipline, I elude most men. This deluded world is not aware that I am unborn and immutable. I know all creatures that have been, that now exist, and that are yet to be, but, Arjuna, no one knows me. All creatures are bewildered at birth by the delusion of opposing qualities that arise from desire and hatred. But when they cease from evil and act with virtue, they devote themselves to me, firm in their vows, freed from the delusion of duality. Trusting me, men strive for freedom from old age and death. They know the infinite spirit, its inner self, and all its action. Men who know me as its inner being, inner divinity, and inner sacrifice have disciplined their reason. They know me at the time of death. The eighth teaching: the infinite spirit. Arjuna speaks. What is the infinite spirit, Krishna? What is its inner self, its action? What is its inner being called? What is its inner divinity? Who is within sacrifice, Krishna? How is he here in the body? And how are men of self-control to know you at the time of death? Lord Krishna, eternal and supreme is the infinite spirit. Its inner self is called inherent being. Its creative force, known as action, is the source of creatures' existence. Its inner being is perishable existence. Its inner divinity is man's spirit. I am the inner sacrifice here in your body, O best of mortals. A man who dies remembering me at the time of death enters my being when he is freed from his body. Of this there is no doubt. Whatever being he remembers when he abandons the body at death, he enters, Arjuna, always existing in that being. Therefore, at all times, remember me and fight. Mind and understanding fixed on me, free from doubt, you will come to me. Disciplined through practice, his reason never straying, meditating, one reaches the supreme divine spirit of man. One should remember man's spirit as the guide, the primordial poet, smaller than an atom, granter of all things in form inconceivable, the color of the sun beyond darkness. At the time of death, with the mind immovable, armed with devotion and strength of discipline, focusing vital breath between the brows, one attains the supreme divine spirit of man. I shall teach you in summary about the state that scholars of sacred lore call eternal, the state ascetics enter, freed from passion, which some men seek in the celibate life, controlling the body's gates, keeping the mind in the heart, holding his own breath in his head. One is in disciplined concentration, invoking the infinite spirit as the one eternal syllable, Om. Remembering me as he abandons his body, he reaches the absolute way. When he constantly remembers me, focusing his reason on me, I am easy to reach, Arjuna, for the man of enduring discipline. Reaching me, men of great spirit do not undergo rebirth, the ephemeral realm of suffering. They attain absolute perfection. Even in Brahma's cosmic realm, worlds evolve in incessant cycles. But a man who reaches me suffers no rebirth, Arjuna. When they know that a day of Brahma stretches over 1,000 eons, and his night ends in 1,000 eons, men understand day and night. At break of Brahma's day, all things emerge from unmanifest nature. When night falls, all sink into unmanifest darkness. Arjuna, the throng of creatures that comes to exist dissolves unwillingly at nightfall to emerge again at daybreak. Beyond this unmanifest nature is another unmanifest existence, a timeless being that does not perish when all creatures perish. It is called eternal unmanifest nature, what men call the highest way, the goal from which they do not return. This highest realm is mine. It is man's highest spirit, won by singular devotion, Arjuna, in whom creatures rest and the whole universe extends. Arjuna, I shall tell you precisely the time when men of discipline who have died suffer rebirth or escape it. Men who know the infinite spirit reach its infinity if they die in fire, light, day, bright lunar night, the sun's 6-month northward course. In smoke, night, dark lunar night, the sun's 6-month southward course, a man of discipline reaches the moon's light and returns. These bright and dark pathways are deemed constant for the universe. By one, a man escapes rebirth. By the other, he is born again. No man of discipline is deluded when he knows these two paths. Therefore, Arjuna, be armed in all times with discipline. Knowing the fruit of virtue assigned to knowledge of sacred lore, to sacrifices, to penances, and to acts of charity, the man of discipline transcends all this and ascends to the place of pure beginning. The 9th teaching, the sublime mystery. Lord Krishna speaks, I will teach the deepest mystery to you, since you find no fault, realizing it with knowledge and judgment you will be free from misfortune. This science and mystery of kings is the supreme purifier, intuitive, true to duty, joyous to perform, unchanging. Without faith in sacred duty, men fail to reach me, Arjuna. They return to the cycle of death and rebirth. The whole universe is pervaded by my unmanifest form. All creatures exist in me, but I do not exist in them. Behold the power of my discipline. These creatures are really not in me. Myself quickens creatures, sustaining them without being in them. Just as the wide-moving wind is constantly present in space, so all creatures exist in me. Understand it to be so. As an eon ends, all creatures fold into my nature, Arjuna, and I create them again as a new eon begins. Gathering in my own nature again and again, I freely create this whole throng of creatures helpless in the force of my nature. These actions do not bind me, since I remain detached in all my actions, Arjuna, as if I stood apart from them. Nature, with me as her inner eye, bears animate and inanimate beings, and by reason of this, Arjuna, the universe continues to turn. Deluded men despise me in the human form I have assumed, ignorant of my higher existence as the great lord of creatures. Reason warped, hope, action, and knowledge wasted, they fall prey to a seductive, fiendish, demonic nature. In single-minded dedication, great souls devote themselves to my divine nature, knowing me as unchanging, the origin of creatures, always glorifying me, striving, firm in their vows, paying me homage with devotion. They worship me, always disciplined, sacrificing through knowledge. Others worship my universal presence in its unity and in its many different aspects. I am the rite, the sacrifice, the libation for the dead, the healing herb, the sacred hymn, the clarified butter, the fire, the oblation. I am the universal father, mother, granter of all, grandfather, object of knowledge, purifier, holy syllable, Om, threefold sacred lore. I am the way, sustainer, Lord, witness, shelter, refuge, friend, source, dissolution, stability, treasure, and unchanging seed. I am the heat that withholds and sends down the rains. I am immortality and death, both being and non-being am I. Men learned in sacred lore, soma drinkers, their sins absolved, worship me with sacrifices, seeking to win heaven. Reaching the holy world of Indra, king of the gods, they savor the heavenly delights of the gods in the celestial sphere. When they have long enjoyed the world of heaven, and their merit is exhausted, they enter the mortal world, following the duties ordained in sacred lore, desiring desires, they obtain what is transient. Men who worship me, thinking solely of me, always disciplined, win the reward I secure. When devoted men sacrifice to other deities with faith, they sacrifice to me, Arjuna, however aberrant the rites. I am the enjoyer and the lord of all sacrifices. They do not know me in reality, and so they fail. Votaries of the gods go to the gods. Ancestor worshippers go to the ancestors. Those who propitiate ghosts go to them, and my worshippers go to me. The leaf or flower or fruit or water that he offers with devotion, I take from the man of self-restraint in response to his devotion. Whatever you do, what you take, what you offer, what you give, what penances you perform, do as an offering to me, Arjuna. You will be freed from the bonds of action, from the fruit of fortune and misfortune. Armed with the discipline of renunciation, yourself liberated, you will join me. I am impartial to all creatures, and no one is hateful or dear to me. But men devoted to me are in me, and I am within them. If he is devoted solely to me, even a violent criminal must be deemed a man of virtue, for his resolve is right. His spirit quickens to sacred duty, and he finds eternal peace. Arjuna, know that no one devoted to me is lost. If they rely on me, Arjuna, women, commoners, men of low rank, even men born in the womb of evil, reach the highest way. How easy is it then for holy priests and devoted royal sages in this transient world of sorrow, devote yourself to me. Keep me in your mind and devotion. Sacrifice to me. Bow to me. Discipline yourself toward me, and you will reach me. The 10th teaching. Fragments of divine power. Lord Krishna speaks. Great warrior, again hear my word in its supreme form. Desiring your good, I speak to deepen your love. Neither the multitude of gods nor great sages know my origin, for I am the source of all the gods and great sages. A mortal who knows me as the unborn, beginningless, great Lord of the worlds is freed from delusion and all evils. Understanding, knowledge, non-delusion, patience, truth, control, tranquility, joy, suffering, being, non-being, fear and fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, contentment, penance, charity, glory, disgrace. These diverse attitudes of creatures arise from me. The 7 ancient great sages and the 4 ancestors of man are mind-born aspects of me. Their progeny fills the world. The man who in reality knows my power and my discipline is armed with unwavering discipline. In this there is no doubt. I am the source of everything, and everything proceeds from me. Filled with my existence, wise men, realizing this, are devoted to me. Thinking and living deep in me, they enlighten one another by constantly telling of me for their own joy and delight. To men of enduring discipline, devoted to me with affection, I give the discipline of understanding by which they come to me. Dwelling compassionately deep in the self, I dispel darkness born of ignorance with the radiant light of knowledge. Arjuna speaks. You are supreme, the infinite spirit, the highest abode, sublime purifier, man's spirit, eternal, divine, the primordial God, unborn, omnipotent. So the ancient seers spoke of you, as did the epic poet Vyasa, and the bards who sang for gods, ancestors, and men. And now you tell me yourself. Lord Krishna, I realize the truth of all you tell me. Neither gods nor demons know your manifest nature. You know yourself through the Self, Krishna, supreme among men, sustainer and lord of creatures, god of gods, master of the universe. Tell me without reserve the divine powers of yourself, powers by which you pervade these worlds. Lord of discipline, how can I know you as I meditate on you? In what diverse aspects can I think of you, Krishna? Recount in full extent the discipline and power of yourself. Krishna, I can never hear enough of your immortal speech. Lord Krishna, listen, Arjuna, as I recount for you in essence the divine powers of myself. Endless is my extent. I am the Self abiding in the heart of all creatures. I am their beginning, their middle, and their end. I am Vishnu striding among sun gods, the radiant sun among lights. I am lightning among wind gods, the moon among the stars. I am the song in sacred lore. I am Indra, king of the gods. I am the mind of the senses, the consciousness of creatures. I am gracious Shiva among howling storm gods, the lord of wealth among demigods and demons, fire blazing among the bright gods. I am golden Meru, towering over the mountains. Arjuna, know me as the god's teacher, chief of the household priests. I am the god of war among generals. I am the ocean of lakes. I am Bhrigu, priest of the great seers. Of words, I am the eternal syllable Om, the prayer of sacrifices. I am Himalaya, the measure of what endures. Among trees, I am the sacred fig tree. I am chief of the divine sages, leader of the celestial musicians, the recluse philosopher among saints. Among horses, know me as the immortal stallion born from the sea of elixir. Among elephants, the divine king's mount. Among men, the king. I am the thunderbolt among weapons. Among cattle, the magical wish-granting cow. I am the procreative god of love, the king of the snakes. I am the endless cosmic serpent, the lord of all sea creatures. I am chief of the ancestral fathers of restraints. I am death. I am the pious son of demons. Of measures, I am time. I am the lion among wild animals, the eagle among birds. I am the purifying wind, the warrior Rama bearing arms, the sea monster crocodile, the flowing river Ganges. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of creations, Arjuna. Of sciences, I am the science of the self. I am the dispute of the orators. I am the vowel ah of the syllabary, the pairing of words in a compound. I am indestructible time, the creator facing everywhere at once. I am death, the destroyer of all, the source of what will be, the feminine powers, fame, fortune, speech, memory, intelligence, resolve, patience. I am the great ritual chant, the meter of sacred song, the most sacred month in the year, the spring blooming with flowers. I am the dice game of gamblers, the brilliance of fiery heroes. I am victory and resolve, the lucidity of lucid men. I am Krishna among my mighty kinsmen. I am Arjuna among the Pandava princes. I am the epic poet Vyasa among sages, the inspired singer among bards. I am the scepter of rulers, the morality of ambitious men. I am the silence of mysteries, what men of knowledge know. Arjuna, I am the seed of all creatures. Nothing animate or inanimate could exist without me. Fiery hero, endless are my divine powers. Of my power's extent, I have barely hinted. Whatever is powerful, lucid, splendid, or invulnerable has its source in a fragment of my brilliance. What use is so much knowledge to you, Arjuna? I stand sustaining this entire world with a fragment of my being. The 11th teaching, the vision of Krishna's totality. Arjuna speaks. To favor me, you revealed the deepest mystery of the self, and by your words my delusion is dispelled. I heard from you in detail how creatures come to be and die, Krishna, and about the self in its immutable greatness. Just as you have described yourself, I wish to see your form in all its majesty, Krishna, supreme among men. If you think I can see it, reveal to me your immutable self, Krishna, Lord of discipline, Lord Krishna. Arjuna, see my forms in hundreds and thousands, diverse, divine, of many colors and shapes. See the sun gods, gods of light, howling storm gods, twin gods of dawn and gods of wind, Arjuna, wondrous forms not seen before. Arjuna, see all the universe, animate and inanimate, and whatever else you wish to see. All stands here as one in my body, but you cannot see me with your own eye. I will give you a divine eye to see the majesty of my discipline. Sanjaya speaks, O King, saying this, Krishna, the great Lord of discipline, revealed to Arjuna the true majesty of his form. It was a multiform, wondrous vision with countless mouths and eyes and celestial ornaments, brandishing many divine weapons. Everywhere was boundless divinity containing all astonishing things, wearing divine garlands and garments anointed with divine perfume. If the light of a thousand suns were to rise in the sky at once, it would be like the light of that great spirit. Arjuna saw all the universe in its many ways and parts standing as one in the body of the God of gods. Then, filled with amazement, his hair bristling on his flesh, Arjuna bowed his head to the god, joined his hands in homage, and spoke. Arjuna, I see the gods in your body, O God, and hordes of varied creatures. Brahma, the cosmic creator on his lotus throne, all the seers and celestial serpents. I see your boundless form everywhere, the countless arms, bellies, mouths, and eyes. Lord of all, I see no end or middle or beginning to your totality. I see you blazing through the fiery rays of your crown, mace, and discus, hard to behold in the burning light of fire and sun that surrounds your measureless presence. You are to be known as supreme eternity, the deepest treasure of all that is, the immutable guardian of enduring sacred duty. I think you are man's timeless spirit. I see no beginning or middle or end to you, only boundless strength in your endless arms, the moon and sun in your eyes, your mouths of consuming flames, your own brilliance scorching this universe. You alone fill the space between heaven and earth and all the directions. Seeing this awesome, terrible form of yours, great soul, the three worlds tremble. Throngs of gods enter you. Some in their terror make gestures of homage to invoke you. Throngs of great sages and saints hail you and praise you in resounding hymns. Howling storm gods, sun gods, bright gods, and gods of ritual, gods of the universe, twin gods of dawn, wind gods, vapor-drinking ghosts, throngs of celestial musicians, demigods, demons, and saints, all gaze at you, amazed. Seeing the many mouths and eyes of your great form, its many arms, thighs, feet, bellies, and fangs, the worlds tremble, and so do I. Vishnu, seeing you brush the clouds with flames of countless colors, your mouths agape, your huge eyes blazing, my inner self quakes, and I find no resolve or tranquility. Seeing the fangs protruding from your mouths like the fires of time, I lose my bearings, and I find no refuge. Be gracious, Lord of gods, shelter of the universe. All those sons of the blind king Dhritarashtra came accompanied by troops of kings, by the generals Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and by our battle leaders, rushing through your fangs into grim mouths. Some are dangling from heads crushed between your teeth. As roiling river waters stream headlong toward the sea, so do these human heroes enter into your blazing mouths. As moths in the frenzy of destruction fly into a blazing flame, worlds in the frenzy of destruction enter your mouths. You lick at the worlds around you, devouring them with flaming mouths, and your terrible fires scorch the entire universe, filling it, Vishnu, with violent rays. Tell me, who are you in this terrible form? Homage to you, best of gods. Be gracious. I want to know you as you are in your beginning. I do not comprehend the course of your ways. Lord Krishna answers, I am time grown old, creating world destruction, set in motion to annihilate the worlds. Even without you, all these warriors arrayed in hostile ranks will cease to exist. Therefore, arise and win glory, conquer your foes, and fulfill your kingship. They are already killed by me. Be just my instrument, the archer at my side. Drona, Bhishma, Jayadratha, and Karna, and all the other battle heroes, are killed by me. Kill them without wavering. Fight, and you will conquer your foes in battle. Sanjaya. Hearing Krishna's words, Arjuna trembled under his crown, and he joined his hands in reverent homage. Terrified of his fear, he bowed to Krishna and stammered in reply. Arjuna. Krishna, the universe responds with joy and rapture to your glory. Terrified demons flee in far directions, and saints throng to bow in homage. Why should they not bow in homage to you, great soul, original creator, more venerable than the creator Brahma? Boundless Lord of gods, shelter of all that is, you are eternity, being, non-being, and beyond. You are the original God, the primordial spirit of man, the deepest treasure of all that is. Knower and what is to be known, the supreme abode. You pervade the universe, Lord of boundless form. You are the gods of wind, death, fire, and water, the moon, the Lord of life, and the great ancestor. Homage to you, 1,000 times homage. I bow in homage to you, again and yet again. I bow in homage before you and behind you. I bow everywhere to your omnipresence. You have boundless strength and limitless force. You fulfill all that you are. Thinking you a friend, I boldly said, "Welcome, Krishna, welcome, cousin, friend." From negligence or through love, I failed to know your greatness. If in jest I offended you, alone or publicly, at sport, rest, sitting, or at meals, I beg your patience, unfathomable Krishna. You are father of the world of animate and inanimate things, its venerable teacher, most worthy of worship, without equal. Where in all three worlds is another to match your extraordinary power? I bow to you, I prostrate my body. I beg you to be gracious, worshipful Lord, as a father to a son, a friend to a friend, a lover to a beloved. O God, bear with me. I am thrilled, and yet my mind trembles with fear at seeing what has not been seen before. Show me, God, the form I know. Be gracious, Lord of gods, shelter of the worlds. I want to see you as before, with your crown and mace and the discus in your hand. O thousand-armed God, assume the four-armed form embodied in your totality. Lord Krishna, to grace you, Arjuna, I revealed through self-discipline my higher form, which no one but you has ever beheld, brilliant, total, boundless, primal. Not through sacred lore or sacrificial ritual or study or charity, not by rites or by terrible penances, can I be seen in this form in the world of men by anyone but you, great hero. Do not tremble or suffer confusion from seeing my horrific form. Your fear dispelled, your mind full of love, see my form again as it was. Sanjaya. Saying this to Arjuna, Krishna once more revealed his intimate form. Resuming his gentle body, the great spirit let the terrified hero regain his breath. Arjuna. Seeing your gentle human form, Krishna, I recover my own nature, and my reason is restored. Lord Krishna. This form you have seen is rarely revealed. The gods are constantly craving for a vision of this form. Not through sacred lore, penances, charity, or sacrificial rites can I be seen in the form that you saw me. By devotion alone can I, as I really am, be known and seen and entered into, Arjuna. Acting only for me, intent on me, free from attachment, hostile to no creature, Arjuna, a man of devotion, comes to me. The 12th teaching, devotion. Arjuna speaks. Who best knows discipline? Men who worship you with devotion, ever disciplined, or men who worship the imperishable, unmanifest? Lord Krishna, I deem most disciplined men of enduring discipline who worship me with true faith, entrusting their minds to me. Men reach me too who worship what is imperishable, ineffable, unmanifest, omnipresent, inconceivable, immutable at the summit of existence. Mastering their senses with equanimity toward everything, they reach me, rejoicing in the welfare of all creatures. It is more arduous when their reason clings to my unmanifest nature. For men constrained by bodies, the unmanifest way is hard to attain. But men intent on me renounce all actions to me and worship me, meditating with singular discipline. When they entrust reason to me, Arjuna, I soon arise to rescue them from the ocean of death and rebirth. Focus your mind on me. Let your understanding enter me. Then you will dwell in me without doubt. If you cannot concentrate your thought firmly on me, then seek to reach me, Arjuna, by discipline in practice. Even if you fail in practice, dedicate yourself to action, performing actions for my sake. You will achieve success. If you are powerless to do even this, rely on my discipline, be self-controlled, and reject all fruit of action. Knowledge is better than practice. Meditation better than knowledge. Rejecting fruits of action is better still. It brings peace. One who bears hate for no creature is friendly, compassionate, unselfish, free of individuality, patient, the same in suffering and joy, content always, disciplined, self-controlled, firm in his resolve, his mind and understanding dedicated to me, devoted to me, he is dear to me. The world does not flee from him, nor does he flee from the world. Free of delight, rage, fear, and disgust, he is dear to me. Disinterested, pure, skilled, indifferent, untroubled, relinquishing all involvements, devoted to me, he is dear to me. He does not rejoice or hate, grieve or feel desire. Relinquishing fortune and misfortune, the man of devotion is dear to me. Impartial to foe and friend, honor and contempt, cold and heat, joy and suffering, he is free from attachment. Neutral to blame and praise, silent, content with his fate, unsheltered, firm in thought, the man of devotion is dear to me. Even more dear to me are devotees who cherish this elixir of sacred duty as I have taught it, intent on me in their faith. The 13th teaching, knowing the field. Lord Krishna speaks, the field denotes this body, and wise men call one who knows it the field knower. Know me as the field knower in all fields. What I deem to be knowledge is knowledge of the field and its knower. Hear from me in summary what the field is in its character and changes, and of the field knower's power. Ancient seers have sung of this in many ways with varied meters and with aphorisms on the infinite spirit laced with logical arguments. The field contains the great elements, individuality, understanding, unmanifest nature, the 11 senses and the five sense realms. Longing, hatred, happiness, suffering, bodily form, consciousness, resolve. Thus is the field, with its changes, defined in summary. Knowledge means humility, sincerity, nonviolence, patience, honesty, reverence for one's teacher, purity, stability, self-restraint, dispassion towards sense objects, and absence of individuality, seeing the defects in birth, death, old age, sickness, and suffering. Detachment, uninvolvement with sons, wife, and home, constant equanimity in fulfillment and frustration, unwavering devotion to me with singular discipline, retreating to a place of solitude, avoiding worldly affairs, persistence in knowing the self, seeing what knowledge of reality means. All this is called knowledge. The opposite is ignorance. I shall teach you what is to be known, for, knowing it, one attains immortality. It is called the Supreme Infinite Spirit, beginningless, neither being nor non-being. Its hands and feet reach everywhere. Its head and face see in every direction. Hearing everything, it remains in the world, enveloping all. Lacking all the sense organs, it shines in their qualities. Unattached, it supports everything. Without qualities, it enjoys them. Outside and within all creatures, inanimate but still animate, too subtle to be known, it is far distant, yet near. Undivided, it seems divided among creatures. Understood as their sustainer, it devours and creates them. The light of lights beyond darkness, it is called. Knowledge attained by knowledge, fixed in the heart of everyone. So, in summary, I have explained the field and knowledge of it. A man devoted to me, knowing this, enters into my being. Know that both nature and man's spirit have no beginning, that qualities and changes have their origin in nature. For its agency in producing effects, nature is called a cause. In the experience of joy and suffering, man's spirit is called a cause. Man's spirit is set in nature, experiencing the qualities born of nature. Its attachment to the qualities causes births in the wombs of good and evil. Witness, consenter, sustainer, enjoyer, the great Lord is called the highest self, man's true spirit in this body. Knowing nature and the spirit of man, as well as the qualities of nature, one is not born again, no matter how one now exists. By meditating on the self, some men see the self through the self. Others see by philosophical discipline. Others by the discipline of action. Others, despite their ignorance, revere what they hear from other men. They too cross beyond death, intent on what they hear. Arjuna, know that anything inanimate or alive with motion is born from the union of the field and its knower. He really sees, who sees the highest Lord standing equal among all creatures, undecaying amid destruction. Seeing the Lord standing the same everywhere, the self cannot injure itself and goes the highest way. He really sees, who sees that all actions are performed by nature alone, and that the self is not an actor. When he perceives the unity existing in separate creatures and how they expand from unity, he attains the infinite spirit, beginningless, without qualities. The supreme self is unchanging, even abiding in a body, Arjuna. It does not act, nor is it defiled. Just as all-pervading space remains unsullied in its subtlety, so the self in every body remains unsullied. Just as one sun illumines this entire world, so the master of the field illumines the entire field. They reach the highest state who, with the eye of knowledge, know the boundary between the knower and its field, and the freedom creatures have from nature. The 14th teaching, the triad of nature's qualities. Lord Krishna speaks, I shall teach you still more of the farthest knowledge one can know. Knowing it, all the sages have reached perfection. Resorting to this knowledge, they follow the ways of my sacred duty. In creation, they are not reborn. In dissolution, they suffer no sorrow. My womb is the great infinite spirit. In it, I place the embryo. And from this, Arjuna, comes the origin of all creatures. The infinite spirit is the great womb of all forms that come to be in all wombs, and I am the seed-giving father. Lucidity, passion, dark inertia, these qualities inherent in nature bind the unchanging embodied self in the body. Lucidity, being untainted, is luminous and without decay. It binds one with attachment to joy and knowledge. Arjuna, know that passion is emotional, born of craving and attachment. It binds the embodied self with attachment to action. Know dark inertia, born of ignorance, as the delusion of every embodied self. It binds one with negligence, indolence, and sleep, Arjuna. Lucidity addicts one to joy and passion to actions, but dark inertia obscures knowledge and addicts one to negligence. When lucidity dominates passion and inertia, it thrives. And likewise, when passion or inertia dominates the other two. When the light of knowledge shines in all the body's senses, then one knows that lucidity prevails. When passion increases, Arjuna, greed and activity, involvement in actions, disquiet and longing arise. When dark inertia increases, obscurity and inactivity, negligence and delusion arise. When lucidity prevails, the self whose body dies enters the untainted worlds of those who know reality. When he dies in passion, he is born among lovers of action. So when he dies in dark inertia, he is born into wombs of folly. The fruit of good conduct is pure and untainted, they say. But suffering is the fruit of passion, ignorance, the fruit of dark inertia. From lucidity, knowledge is born. From passion comes greed. From dark inertia come negligence, delusion, and ignorance. Men who are lucid go upward. Men of passion stay in between. Men of dark inertia, caught in vile ways, sink low. When a man of vision sees nature's qualities as the agent of action and knows what lies beyond, he enters into my being. Transcending the three qualities that are the body's source, the self achieves immortality, freed from the sorrows of birth, death, and old age. Arjuna. Lord, what signs mark a man who passes beyond the three qualities? What does he do to cross beyond these qualities? Krishna. He does not dislike light or activity or delusion. When they cease to exist, he does not desire them. He remains disinterested, unmoved by qualities of nature. He never wavers, knowing that only qualities are in motion. Self-reliant, impartial to suffering and joy, to clay, stone, or gold, the resolute man is the same to foe and friend, to blame and praise, the same in honor and disgrace, to ally and enemy. A man who abandons involvements transcends the qualities of nature. One who serves me faithfully with discipline of devotion transcends the qualities of nature and shares in the infinite spirit. I am the infinite spirit's foundation, immortal and immutable, the basis of eternal sacred duty and of perfect joy. The 15th teaching, the true spirit of man. Lord Krishna, roots in the air, branches below, the tree of life is unchanging, they say. Its leaves are hymns, and he who knows it knows sacred lore. Its branches stretch below and above, nourished by nature's qualities, budding with sense objects. Aerial roots tangled in actions reach downward into the world of men. Its form is unknown here in the world. Unknown are its end, its beginning, its extent. Cut down this tree that has such deep roots with the sharp axe of detachment. Then search to find the realm that one enters without returning. I seek refuge in the original spirit of man from which primordial activity extended. Without pride or delusion, the fault of attachment overcome, intent on the self within, their desires extinguished, freed from dualities, from joy and suffering, undeluded men reach that realm beyond change. Neither sun nor moon nor fire illumines my highest abode. Once there, they do not return. A fragment of me in the living world is the timeless essence of life. It draws out the senses and the mind inherent in nature. When the Lord takes on a body and then leaves it, he carries these along like the wind bearing scents from earth, governing hearing, sight, touch, taste, smell, and thought. He savors objects of the senses. Deluded men do not perceive him in departure or presence or enjoyment of nature's qualities, but the eyes of knowledge see him. Men of discipline who strive see him present within themselves, but without self-mastery and reason, even those who strive fail to see. Know that my brilliance, flaming in the sun, in the moon, and in fire, illumines this whole universe. I penetrate the earth and sustain creatures by my strength. Becoming soma, the liquid of moonlight, I nurture all healing herbs. I am the universal fire within the body of living beings. I work with the flow of vital breath to digest the foods that men consume. I dwell deep in the heart of everyone. Memory, knowledge, and reasoning come from me. I am the object to be known through all sacred lore, and I am its knower, the creator of its final truth. There is a double spirit of man in the world, transient and eternal. Transient in all creatures, eternal at the summit of existence. Other is the supreme spirit of man, called the Supreme Self, the immutable Lord, who enters and sustains the three worlds. Since I transcend what is transient, and I am higher than the eternal, I am known as the supreme spirit of man in the world and in sacred lore. Whoever knows me without delusion as the supreme spirit of man knows all there is, Arjuna. He devotes his whole being to me. Arjuna, thus I have taught this most secret tradition. Realizing it, one has understanding, and his purpose is fulfilled. The 16th teaching, the divine and the demonic in man. Lord Krishna. Fearlessness, purity, determination in the discipline of knowledge, charity, self-control, sacrifice, study of sacred lore, penance, honesty, non-violence, truth, absence of anger, disengagement, peace, loyalty, compassion for creatures, lack of greed, gentleness, modesty, reliability, brilliance, patience, resolve, clarity, absence of envy and of pride, these characterize a man born with divine traits. Hypocrisy, arrogance, vanity, anger, harshness, ignorance, these characterize a man born with demonic traits. The divine traits lead to freedom, the demonic lead to bondage. Do not despair, Arjuna. You were born with the divine. All creatures in the world are either divine or demonic. I described the divine at length. Hear what I say of the demonic. Demonic men cannot comprehend activity and rest. There exists no clarity, no morality, no truth in them. They say that the world has no truth, no basis, no God, that no power of mutual dependence is its cause, but only desire. Mired in this view, lost to themselves with their meager understanding, these fiends contrive terrible acts to destroy the world. Subject to insatiable desire, drunk with hypocrisy and pride, holding false notions from delusion, they act with impure vows. In their certainty that life consists in sating their desires, they suffer immeasurable anxiety that ends only with death. Bound by 100 fetters of hope, obsessed by desire and anger, they hoard wealth in stealthy ways to satisfy their desires. I have gained this wish today, and I shall attain that one. This wealth is mine, and there will be more. I have killed that enemy, and I shall kill others too. I am the Lord. I am the enjoyer, successful, strong, and happy. I am wealthy and well-born. Without peers, I shall sacrifice, give, rejoice. So say men, deluded by ignorance, confused by endless thoughts, caught in the net of delusion. Given to satisfying their desires, they fall into hell's foul abyss. self-aggrandizing, stubborn, drunk with wealth and pride, they sacrifice in name only, in hypocrisy, violating all norms. Submitting to individuality, power, arrogance, desire, and anger, they hate me and revile me in their own bodies as in others. These hateful, cruel, vile men of misfortune I cast into demonic wombs through cycles of rebirth. Fallen into a demonic womb, deluded in birth after birth, they fail to reach me, Arjuna, and they go the lowest way. The three gates of hell that destroy the self are desire, anger, and greed. One must relinquish all three. Released through these three gates of darkness, Arjuna, a man elevates the self and ascends to the highest way. If he rejects norms of tradition and lives to fulfill his desires, he does not reach perfection or happiness or the highest way. Let tradition be your standard in judging what to do or avoid. Knowing the norms of tradition, perform your action here. The 17th teaching. Three aspects of faith. Arjuna speaks. Men who ignore the ways of tradition but sacrifice in full faith, Krishna, what quality of nature is basic in them? Lucidity, passion, or dark inertia? Lord Krishna, listen as I explain the threefold nature of faith inherent in the embodied self, lucid, passionate, and darkly inert. The faith each man has, Arjuna, follows his degree of lucidity. A man consists of his faith, and as his faith is, so is he. Men of lucidity sacrifice to the gods, men of passion to spirits and demons. The others, men of dark inertia, sacrifice to corpses and to ghosts. Men who practice horrific penances that go against traditional norms are trapped in hypocrisy and individuality, overwhelmed by the emotion of desire. Without reason, they torment the elements composing their bodies, and they torment me within them. Know them to have demonic resolve. Food is also of three kinds, to please each type of taste. Sacrifice, penance, and charity likewise divide in three ways. Foods that please lucid men are savory, smooth, firm, and rich. They promote long life, lucidity, strength, health, pleasure, and delight. Passionate men crave foods that are bitter, sour, salty, hot, pungent, harsh, and burning, causing pain, grief, and sickness. The food that pleases men of dark inertia is stale, unsavory, putrid, and spoiled, leavings unfit for sacrifice. A sacrifice is offered with lucidity when the norms are kept and the mind is focused on the sacrificial act without craving for its fruit. But a sacrifice is offered with passion, Arjuna, when it is focused on the fruit and hypocrisy is at play. A sacrifice is governed by dark inertia when it violates the norms, empty of faith, omitting the ritual offering of food and chants and gifts. Honoring gods, priests, teachers, and wise men, being pure, honest, celibate, and nonviolent is called bodily penance. Speaking truth without offense, giving comfort, and reciting sacred lore is called verbal penance. Mental serenity, kindness, silence, self-restraint, and purity of being is called mental penance. This threefold penance is lucid when men of discipline perform it with deep faith without craving for reward. Wavering and unstable, performed with hypocrisy to gain respect, honor, and worship, that penance is called passionate. Performed with deluded perception, self-mortification, or sadism, such penance has dark inertia. Given in due time and place to a fit recipient who can give no advantage, charity is remembered as lucid. But charity given reluctantly, to secure some service in return or to gain a future reward, is remembered as passionate. Charity given out of place and time to an unfit recipient ungraciously and with contempt is remembered for its dark inertia. Om Tat Sat. That is the real. This is the triple symbol of the infinite spirit that gave a primordial sanctity to priests, sacred lore, and sacrifice. Om. Knowers of the infinite spirit chant it as they perform acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance prescribed by tradition. Tat. Men who crave freedom utter it as they perform acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance without concern for reward. Sat. It means what is real and what is good, Arjuna. The word Sat is also used when an action merits praise. Sat is steadfastness in sacrifice, in penance, in charity. Any action of this order is donated by Sat. But oblation, charity, and penance offered without faith are called Asat, for they have no reality here or in the world after death. The 18th teaching. The wondrous dialogue concludes. Arjuna speaks. Krishna, I want to know the real essence of both renunciation and relinquishment. Lord Krishna, giving up actions based on desire, the poets know as renunciation. Relinquishing all fruit of action, learned men call relinquishment. Some wise men say all action is flawed and must be relinquished. Others say action in sacrifice, charity, and penance must not be relinquished. Arjuna, hear my decision about relinquishment. It is rightly declared to be of three kinds. Action in sacrifice, charity, and penance is to be performed, not relinquished. For wise men, they are acts of sanctity. But even these actions should be done by relinquishing to me attachment and the fruit of action. This is my decisive idea. Renunciation of prescribed action is inappropriate. Relinquished in delusion, it becomes a way of dark inertia. When one passionately relinquishes difficult action from fear of bodily harm, he cannot win the fruit of relinquishment. But if one performs prescribed action because it must be done, relinquishing attachment and the fruit, his relinquishment is a lucid act. He does not disdain unskilled action, nor cling to skilled action. In his lucidity, the relinquisher is wise, and his doubts are cut away. A man burdened by his body cannot completely relinquish actions, but a relinquisher is defined as one who can relinquish the fruits. The fruit of action haunts men in death if they fail to relinquish all forms, unwanted, wanted, and mixed, but not if men renounce them. Arjuna, learn from me the five causes for the success of all actions, as explained in philosophical analysis. They are the material basis, the agent, the different instruments, various kinds of behavior, and finally, fate, the fifth. Whatever action one initiates through body, speech, and mind, be it proper or perverse, these five causes are present. This being so, when a man of poor understanding and misjudgment sees himself as the only agent, he cannot be said to see. When one is free of individuality and his understanding is untainted, even if he kills these people, he does not kill and is not bound. Knowledge, its object, and its subject are the triple stimulus of action. Instrument, act, and agent are the constituents of action. Knowledge, action, agent are threefold, differentiated by qualities of nature. Hear how this has been explained in the philosophical analysis of qualities. Know that through lucid knowledge one sees in all creatures a single, unchanging existence, undivided within its divisions. Know passionate knowledge as that which regards various distinct existences separately in all creatures. But knowledge that clings to a single thing as if it were the whole, limited, lacking a sense of reality, is known for its dark inertia. Action, known for its lucidity, is necessary, free of attachment, performed without attraction or hatred by one who seeks no fruit. Action called passionate is performed with great effort by an individualist who seeks to satisfy his desires. Action defined by dark inertia is undertaken in delusion without concern for consequences, for death or violence or for manhood. An agent called pure has no attachment or individualism, is resolute and energetic, unchanged in failure and success. An agent said to be passionate is anxious to gain the fruit of action, greedy, essentially violent, impure, subject to excitement and grief. An agent defined by dark inertia is undisciplined, vulgar, stubborn, fraudulent, dishonest, lazy, depressed, and slow to act. Listen as I tell you, without reserve, about understanding and resolve, each in three aspects, according to the qualities of nature. In one who knows activity and rest, acts of right and wrong, bravery and fear, bondage and freedom, understanding is lucid. When one fails to discern sacred duty from chaos, right acts from wrong, understanding is passionate. When it thinks in perverse ways, is covered in darkness, imagining chaos to be sacred duty, understanding is darkly inert. When it sustains acts of mind, breath, and senses through discipline without wavering, resolve is lucid. When it sustains with attachment, duty, desire, and wealth, craving their fruits, resolve is passionate. When a fool cannot escape dreaming, fear, grief, depression, and intoxication, courage is darkly inert. Arjuna, now hear about joy, the three ways of finding delight through practice that brings an end to suffering. The joy of lucidity at first seems like poison, but is in the end like ambrosia from the calm of self-understanding. The joy that is passionate at first seems like ambrosia when senses encounter sense objects, but in the end it is like poison. The joy arising from sleep, laziness, and negligence, self-deluding from beginning to end, is said to be darkly inert. There is no being on earth or among the gods in heaven free from the triad of qualities that are born of nature. The actions of priests, warriors, commoners, and servants are apportioned by qualities born of their intrinsic being. Tranquility, control, penance, purity, patience, and honesty, knowledge, judgment, and piety are intrinsic to the action of a priest. Heroism, fiery energy, resolve, skill, refusal to retreat in battle, charity, and majesty in conduct are intrinsic to the action of a warrior. Farming, herding cattle, and commerce are intrinsic to the action of a commoner. Action that is essentially service is intrinsic to the servant. Each one achieves success by focusing on his own action. Hear how one finds success by focusing on his own action. By his own action, a man finds success. Worshipping the source of all creatures' activity, the presence pervading all that is. Better to do one's own duty imperfectly than to do another man's well. Doing action intrinsic to his being, a man avoids guilt. Arjuna, a man should not relinquish action he is born to, even if it is flawed. All undertakings are marred by a flaw, as fire is obscured by smoke. His understanding everywhere detached, the self mastered, longing gone, one finds through renunciation the supreme success beyond action. Understand in summary from me how when he achieves success, one attains the infinite spirit, the highest state of knowledge. Armed with his purified understanding, subduing the self with resolve, relinquishing sensuous objects, avoiding attraction and hatred, observing solitude, barely eating, restraining speech, body, and mind, practicing discipline in meditation, cultivating dispassion, freeing himself from individuality, force, pride, desire, anger, acquisitiveness, unpossessive, tranquil, he is at one with the Infinite Spirit. Being at one with the Infinite Spirit, serene in himself, he does not grieve or crave. Impartial toward all creatures, he achieves supreme devotion to me. Through devotion, he discerns me, just who and how vast I really am. And knowing me in reality, he enters into my presence. Always performing all actions, taking refuge in me, he attains through my grace the eternal place beyond change. Through reason, renounce all works in me, focus on me, relying on the discipline of understanding, always keep me in your thought. If I am in your thought, by my grace, you will transcend all dangers. But if you are deafened by individuality, you will be lost. Your resolve is futile if a sense of individuality makes you think, I shall not fight. nature will compel you to. You are bound by your own action, intrinsic to your being, Arjuna. Even against your will, you must do what delusion now makes you refuse. Arjuna, the Lord resides in the heart of all creatures, making them real magically, as if a machine moved them. With your whole being, Arjuna, take refuge in Him alone. From His grace, you will attain the eternal place that is peace. This knowledge I have taught is more arcane than any mystery. Consider it completely, then act as you choose. Listen to my profound words, the deepest mystery of all, for you are precious to me, and I tell you for your good. Keep your mind on me. Be my devotee, sacrificing. Bow to me. You will come to me, I promise, for you are dear to me. Relinquishing all sacred duties to me, make me your only refuge. Do not grieve, for I shall free you from all evils. You must not speak of this to one who is without penance and devotion, or who does not wish to hear, or who finds fault with me. When he shares this deepest mystery with others devoted to me, giving me his total devotion, a man will come to me without doubt. No mortal can perform service for me that I value more, and no other man on earth will be more dear to me than he is. I judge the man who studies our dialogue on sacred duty to offer me sacrifice through sacrifice in knowledge. If he listens in faith, finding no fault, a man is free and will attain the cherished worlds of those who act in virtue. Arjuna, have you listened with your full powers of reason? Has the delusion of ignorance now been destroyed? Arjuna, Krishna, my delusion is destroyed, and by your grace I have regained memory. I stand here, my doubt dispelled, ready to act on your words. Sanjaya, as I heard this wondrous dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, the man of great soul, the hair bristled on my flesh. By the grace of the epic poet Vyasa, I heard the mystery of supreme discipline recounted by Krishna himself, the Lord of discipline incarnate. O King, when I keep remembering this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I rejoice again and again. In my memory, I recall again and again Krishna's wondrous form. Great is my amazement, King. I rejoice again and again. Where Krishna is Lord of Discipline and Arjuna is the archer, there do fortune, victory, abundance, and morality exist. So I think.
This audio program is presented by Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.